Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Titled From Paris to Nuremberg. But first, with politics, we're going to start out with a little bit of news from my neck of the woods. I live near Kohler, Wisconsin, and Kohler is a large manufacturer here in Wisconsin. And Kohler Company went on strike. And already, the UAW, the United Auto Workers Union, has been issued an injunction. Now, I bring this up because it's made me think about unions and the role of unions and socialism and communism and where we are and where we're headed. Because I looked at that and I thought, gee, wouldn't it be nice to get a representative of Kohler and a representative from the union to come on my show? But then I thought, why? Why would I do that? Kohler has, they issued what they said is their final offer to the unions in the negotiation. The unions have rejected it. They voted 94% to strike. Now, Kohler has a vested interest in continuing their operations in Kohler because it's Kohler, and it was a designed community by the original settlers of Kohler, and I've referred to it before as the capital of obsessive compulsive people in the world, you know, obsessive compulsive central for the U.S., if not the world. And it's a very pretty community, and they have a history of strikes. This company has been in business for 142 years. There was a strike in the 30s that resulted in two deaths. There was the longest strike in United States history in the 50s, I believe. There was a short strike in the 80s. And now there's this one. And the reason that matters is because I was thinking about unions and stuff. And hello, Bigfoot. Welcome to the chat. Glad to see you here as always. But I was thinking about that. And here's the problem. The problem is that their costs for health insurance have gone up dramatically. Kohler Company offered a bonus to cover that cost. But they said, going forward, where's that bonus going to be, which is a legitimate concern. The other problem is that in 2010, when we had that economic downturn, the recession, or as I call it, the depression that still isn't over, even though the mainstream media likes to lie a lot in order to support their baby, Kohler, the unions accepted an offer from Kohler that they would initiate a two-tiered wage system in which newer hires don't get paid as much as older hires. And the unions think that's not fair. It's been 5 years now. You should go back to the way you were paying people before. Now, Kohler offered to start incrementally raising the salaries of these newer workers, but apparently that was not enough because they're saying that's not fair, disregarding the fact that the world is not fair and the world does not care about fair. But I thought about this, and I thought, okay, the two-tiered system, I can see that that's a problem because that's, you know, probably a pathway to COLA paying lower wages overall in the future forever, because eventually the older workers who are getting the higher wages will die off. But the healthcare, you COLA workers, you need to be going to your union for accountability on that, because the United Auto Workers Union jumped in and supported death care wholeheartedly. They supported it. So your rise in health insurance costs, that's your own fault. That's the fault of the union that you're paying to represent you and to meddle in politics of the nation. See, here's the problem with big unions like the UAW. I can understand a union in a big factory like that where the workers want to get together and say, okay, we need this for our safety and our health, and we need to be paid this in order that we can live here and work for you. That's not a problem. I've got no problem at all with that. I have no problem with other local unions joining in with a certain union on strike. None. What I have a problem with is with a union that has become so large that it is a national power, because they don't care about the local people. They don't care if those jobs, if that factory is closed down. They view that as, yes, we are powerful. We have closed this factory. And then what do those workers do? They don't care about you, or they wouldn't have supported death care. I think it's time in America for all those people who are saying, yes, the union's got us these wages and these benefits and what have you. No, you got them. It was your votes on those proposals that said we will or will not accept this. The union is exercising an undue influence, and it's wrong. It's ethically and morally wrong. Now, Kohler's a big company. They're worldwide. I get it. Fine. Then there should be a Kohler union of Kohler employees, not the UAW, which is across many companies that doesn't care about the welfare of the company. Because, you see, the thing that I opposed about private sector unions when they were demonstrating down in Madison is that, or the thing that I oppose about public sector unions is that they think the taxpayers' pockets are bottomless. They have this perception that they can just add another penny onto a tax here or there. But there comes a point, and we have reached it in this nation, where the pockets of the taxpayers are empty. There is no more extra penny, extra percentage of a penny, none. You don't get to keep saying, oh, we can just keep it on the government. And see, the thing is that private unions are supposed to be limited naturally by the company. You don't want to put the company out of business because that's killing the golden goose. If you kill the golden goose, it can't lay any more eggs. So if you have a union that spans thousands of companies across the nation, across the world, why do they care about one business? All they care about is the power of the union to be able to shut down a business. Do you see the logic here? If they shut the business down, you don't have a job anymore. If the business decides to move to Mexico because it can't meet the demands of the union, because it's too expensive, because businesses exist to create a profit for the owners, and there's not a darn thing wrong with that. Because business is a blessing to the community. You want a business in your community to provide those jobs for people. But if you have a union that's not limited by the limitations of the business, what have you got? They're not working for you, Kohler people. They're working for themselves. They don't give a rat's behind about you, except as you give them power with your money and your time and your willingness to strike when they say so. So I didn't call anybody for that interview. And, wow, I see I've got somebody on hold. If you can get into the chat room, you know, and let me know, I'll bring you on. But otherwise, I'll assume you're just here to listen. Now, From Kohler, Wisconsin, I'm going to move on to Paris under the religion portion. Oh, and as for unions behaving badly, as they behaved badly in Madison, there's already been an injunction filed against the union because they were blocking the entrance to the plant. And Kohler went to a judge and said, make them stop, which is good for Kohler. They're putting the kibosh on it right away. There are consequences for bad behavior right away. And good for them because Kohler is a big deal in this part of Wisconsin. And those Kohler strikes get really nasty. People have feuds for years over whether or not you joined the strike or opposed the strike in this neck of the woods. Makes for some very bad behavior. Oh, wait, bad behavior by saying people who have their own agenda? Gosh, say it isn't so. You'll see where I'm going with that if I get to it. In religion, our condolences to Paris. And that's all I've put on the blog, is our condolences to those in Paris, France. Because I don't like to politicize things. But it's been a while now, a few days, and so the politicization has come. We've got France invokes EU Article 42.7. And 42.7, and the computer has taken that link right away, and it's just blank. Isn't that fun? 42.7 is a mutual assistance pact that's built into the European Union stuff. They also have a 22.22 article, and the difference of mutual support, and the difference is that 42.7 stipulates if a member state is the victim of armed aggression on its territory, the other member states shall have towards it an obligation of aid and assistance by all means in their power in accordance with Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. Oh, blah, 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 United Nations Charter. However, the article adds, this shall not prejudice the specific character of the security and defense policy of certain member states. And that sentence means that the neutrality of countries such as Ireland, Austria, and Sweden cannot be impugned, while the emphasis on help from member states means that the defense arrangements are agreed between national governments in the EU without the involvement of the institutions in Brussels, such as the European Commission or the European Parliament. This leaves France free to strike deals with other governments without any interference from Brussels. By contrast, Article 222, eschewed in this instance by the French, says that the Union and its member states shall act jointly in a spirit of solidarity if a member state is the object of a terrorist attack or the victim of a natural or man-made disaster. The Union shall mobilize all the instruments at its disposal, including military resources made available to by the member states. This would hand a major role to the European Commission, which Paris has opted to avoid. Why? Why have they opted to avoid it? I'm thinking that they've opted to avoid it because it's a pain in the bahooey. Because they would join in with the, oh, Islam isn't evil. Islam is wonderful. And we're already seeing that. There's an article that I did not link to in the... Boy, where is it? I did not link to in the show page because, oh, let's see here. If I can find it. Ah, in, let's see, what is this called? IB, International Business Times. International Business Times. There's a speech by Theresa May, who is the Homeland Secretary for the UK, and at the she talks about all the measures they're taking to secure the people of the UK and to make sure that everybody is safe, 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 safe. We've all got to be safe. But at the end of it. At the end of it, she says this. people of all faiths have condemned the violence, and British Muslims, and indeed Muslims worldwide, have said very clearly these events are abhorrent. The attacks have nothing to do with Islam, which is followed peacefully by millions of people around the world. The terrorists seek to divide us and to destroy our way of life, but theirs is an empty, perverted, and murderous ideology. They represent no one, and they will fail. No, they won't fail. They are succeeding, and they are succeeding wildly, and they are getting recruits because they are succeeding. They won't fail. But why do we deny this? Why does Europe and our national leaders, why do they continue to deny that Islam is the root of the problem? You know, my first thought was, because then they would, why are they in denial? Because then they would be required to execute judgment. And they've spent so much time demonizing others who judge people. Oh, you can't judge people. That's hypocritical and bigoted and no doubt, you know, everything. That's everything bad, judging people. We can't judge people. Because they've spent so much time demonizing others who judge people. And then I thought, well, you know, and if they judge ISIS to be bad or evil, if they judge Islam to be bad or evil, then they would be required to act on that judgment in order to protect their people in a sensible way. And then I thought, you know what, it goes farther than that. It's because if they admit that sane people are choosing to act this way, then that shows up the false premise of socialism and communism, which they embrace, that says that when people's basic needs are met, they somehow magically evolve into good people. And here we have these people coming from Syria and being accepted as refugees and having their basic needs met, food, clothing, shelter, and yet they're choosing to bomb and kill and destroy. Oh, it can't be so, because then communism and socialism might be wrong. The premise upon which they're based might be wrong. The premise upon which they're based is wrong. It's not just ISIS. Look back at the Kohler strike. When people are motivated by ideals, they will do things that are not nice, regardless of whether their immediate needs are met. Not to mention that only an idiot would want communism and socialism if they've studied history, because it has resulted in mass murder by government every single time it's been tried. Let me say that again. Every single time, there are no exceptions. You go socialist, you go government, mass murder. The other part of these attacks and the refusal of United States governors to take Syrian refugees into their states is common sense. Not all refugees are created equal. All men are created equal. Not all refugees are equal. They are not equivalent. In my part of Wisconsin, we've taken in a lot of Hmong refugees. We've got the refugee thing down. But those Hmong refugees, by and large, they share our values, that life is valuable, that family is valuable, that you don't go around killing people because they disagree with you. You don't kill people because they don't want you to be in power. You don't go trying to take power away and conquer the nation. Islam is required to do that. Islam requires its adherents to work to destroy everyone except Muslims. The overarching goal of Islam is to conquer the world. It's world conquest. If you look at what our founders had to say about Islam, oh yeah, and why aren't the 57 Islamic states stepping up to the plate to take their Muslim brothers and sisters? Hey, Vito, good to see you. Well, haven't you heard? Saudi Arabia has volunteered to put up 200 mosques in Germany for all their refugees. But if you look back at the United States history, we sent, when the Barbary pirates, Muslim pirates, were plaguing our coasts, demanding 10% of our GDP in exchange for passage. And when we paid it, they kept attacking us. So we sent Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Benjamin Franklin as representatives to mediate the problem. They discovered the Islamic law the pirates followed made it their duty to attack non-Muslims. Jefferson wrote to Secretary of State John Jay explaining peace was not possible. The ambassador answered us that the right was founded on the laws of the Prophet, that it was written in their Quran that all nations who should not have answered to their authority were sinners, that it was their right and duty to make war upon them wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of all they could take prisoners, and that every Muslim who should be slain in battle was sure to go to paradise. Ben Franklin wrote of his experience, nor can the plundering of infidels be in that sacred book, the Quran, forbidden, since it is well known from it that God has given the world and all that it contains to his faithful Muslims who are to enjoy it of right as fast as they conquer it. John Adams, in his report to Jay, wrote of the Muslim prophet Muhammad and called him a military fanatic who denies that laws were made for him. He arrogates everything to himself by force of arms. By the time Jefferson became president, the Barbary Coast was extorting 25% of U.S. GDP, and attacks were still occurring. Jefferson made the Marines. The Navy and the Marines, because they were not in denial. They did not say, these people have an ideology which requires them to do everything to wage war against the rest of the world on every level possible, social, cultural, financial, marriage, rape, violent jihad, piracy. They're required to. They didn't say, oh, let's assume that they're not serious about their faith. They said, we respect that they hold these views, and we react, and we will do accordingly. We think the appropriate response is to create a military for the United States to protect us from them. Wake up. Wake up, socialists. And I'm still asking, who's benefiting from the emptying of Syria? They have over half their people displaced. Over half. Who's taking over that territory? Who's getting it? I know that Mr. Assad is not approved of by UN Agenda 21. They didn't approve of what he's doing with the country ecologically. I looked it up because I get curious about these things. I had somebody on Facebook say, so you don't like Sharia law, but you're going to persecute and not accept the people who are fleeing from Sharia law? I said, they're not fleeing from Sharia law. They're fleeing from war. They're bringing Sharia with them. He didn't think so. He said, no, it's all because of Assad. I said, no. Assad has been in charge of Syria since 2010 when then-president Assad died. Because the president before Mr. Assad was also Mr. Assad because he was his father. New boss, same as the old boss. They weren't fleeing then. They are not fleeing Sharia. They are fleeing from war and bringing Sharia with them. Wake up. Thank God we've got state governors who say, no, we're not taking them. Moving on, I found a neat little site. I'm not sure what it is. It caught my name because it's called Daily Saba. And I was thinking of Saba Ahmed, but I don't think this is her because she refers to Daesh as Daesh. And in the Daily Saba, Daesh terrorists execute Norwegian and Chinese captives. They said they've killed a Norwegian and Chinese captive after demanding ransom for their release 2 months ago. Announcement came in the latest issue of the terrorist group's English language magazine on Wednesday, which contained a page that appeared to show the bodies of two captives. It bears the caption, executed after being abandoned by Kafir nations and organizations. The group had earlier identified Norwegian man as Ole John Grimsgaard Ofstad, 48, from Oslo, and the Chinese man as Fan Jinghui, 50, freelance consultant from Beijing. Did not say when or where the two were captured. The IS group controls large areas in Iraq and Syria. They're still killing. They're still killing. And Bigfoot says, why are the concerns about terrorism a legitimate reason for Arab nations to reject Syrian refugees, but bigotry from Europeans or the U.S.? Because it's semantic jihad, Bigfoot. And remember, when spoken by a Muslim, peace means submission to Allah. Terrorist does not apply to those engaged in the holy duty of jihad. Human rights means Sharia, and I've forgotten the other one. Basic Islamo-speak dictionary. Oh, and religion means Islam and only Islam. Under doing what's right, I've moved on to Germany. I posted the Nuremberg Code because it's good for people to know it. There was a reason for it, but also because this is a transcript from the war trials of Nuremberg. They list the 10 things of the Nuremberg Code, and they say, under the Anglo-Saxon system of jurisprudence, every defendant in a criminal case is presumed to be innocent of an offense charged until the prosecution, by competent, credible proof, has shown his guilt to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt, and this presumption abides with the defendant through each stage of his trial, and on and on and on, saying, you know, basically that we're working to make sure that somebody who's guilty is, that somebody who is accused is guilty before they're punished. That's an Anglo-Saxon system of jurisprudence. The same one that is attacked right and left for being bigoted and Christian values, you're imposing your values on us. Well, guess what? Not everybody in the world cares about your delicate sensibilities. And apparently you don't care that the followers of Islam feel absolutely free to impose their values on us. And given the choice, guess which values I choose? I choose Christian values because they're better. Oh, I'm a bigot. Yes, I'm a bigot because they are objectively better for me, better for my family, and better for the world. And if nobody in the high places is willing to say that, then they should be removed from office to make a judgment on these things. Ooh, I went into a rant anyway. But we're going to talk about Nuremberg some more because the city of Nuremberg has a problem. They have a problem in that a lot of their real estate is from the Nazi times, and they wonder whether they should preserve it. They recently had a forum titled "Preserve for What?" Because a lot of the stuff is decaying. The sheer physical size of a parade ground bigger than 12 football fields, a semicircular congress hall that dwarfs any structure at Lincoln Center, and on and on and on. Then there are its troubled history and the far stickier questions of what to do with it. These are not simple memorials, said Matthias Feil, chief curator of historic sites in Bavaria, because they symbolize a time we can only wish had never happened. So it's a burden on them to maintain them, but how do they get rid of them? How can they possibly get rid of them? And what are you going to do to show people that it actually happened if they're gone? They're wrestling with that question. I don't know what's the right thing to do. But with that, we're all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference, and we're all supposed to. If you keep those things preserved, are they preserving the history of the bad guys too? Yes, they are. But you have to see the evil before you can decide what's good sometimes. Some of us can learn by watching others get burned if they touch fire. Some of us have to get burned. Let's hope we're not getting burned too badly. Thanks for joining me, Bigfoot Vito, and whoever was on the line listening. I'm suspecting Jenna Hulaver. Y'all have a great week. Bye-bye.